Hey, audio listener, nice to see you or hear you again this week. Most people watch this show. There are some intros and sketches and Photoshops that won't make a whole lot of sense in the audio version, but I know maybe you're driving your truck, maybe you're going on vacation, you got your dog on top of the car like Mitt Romney, and so you have to listen to it. We appreciate it. Please do rate this and review it on iTunes, whatever pod catching device or service you're using, and we'll keep you updated on the hard strikes that have been going on YouTube. Hopefully our channel won't go down, and next week there's going to be a new Change My Mind on Tuesday. Enjoy Senator Rand Paul and all the shenanigans that may not make sense because you're listening, not watching. Louder with Crowder Studios, protected exclusively by Walther.
And Hopper.
Thanks to our funding from Mug Club, those false plaintiffs have pulled their hard strikes again, right on time. To the second.
They always do. I fight them for you, and we win every time. And you always act like it's a miracle.
Oh, my dear half-Asian tattoo. When each Mug Club member is paying $99 annually, $69 for students, veterans, or active military, he, she, or Z deserves miracles.
Right, boss.
That's right. I just wanted you to think, if you're watching this in the archive, that you were too hammered to watch this show. But it's actually just me moving around that way. We have Senator Rand Paul on the show today.
Boom! Too hammered to be on the show.
Question of the day. What was your main takeaway from Wednesday's hearing on Barr? The highlight, if you will, we're going to be talking about that. Yeah. Venezuela. And usually I introduce him last, rightfully so. But he is back. G. Morgan
Boom.
Jr.
Woo-hoo,
a married
baby.
Man.
That's
and I
right.
will say I was
official.
I can confirm I was at the wedding.
Okay.
And I was very
okay.
surprised. She was actually just a cardboard cutout of Jack LaLanne.
What?
I was dumbfounded.
She still said yes.
So you came back from, what's the wine of the day?
The wine. So apparently when I was gone, there was a bit of a thing about boxed wine. So boxed wine of the day, baby. Here we go. I am not
what?
Too.
I don't know why Brian can think that's so funny.
Well, no.
Because he
went
did
on...
it.
I would go and would go shopping, and I'd be like, I'd go on Twitter saying, "Well, since I'm feeling it for Gerald, the wine of the day is should I pick this cheap red or this cheap white?"
Is there good boxed wine? Is there
yes.
any good?
There yeah, there's plenty of. I mean, for people who just want everyday wines, not bad.
Would you marry a but woman he's... who likes boxed wine?
I did.
Oh, Jack LaLanne likes boxed wine.
She likes that's great a, wine now too. I'm exposing her to a lot of great wines that she's really enjoying.
So. Right.
Yes.
Okay. Quarter Black Garrett, of course, working
what's
here. Boom. And Brodigan there in third chair. How
are
you doing, Brodigan?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. We're doing well. And leading the
very
news
well.
Before. So
very
good wedding.
Too,
you
yeah.
went to France. Yeah, I can
yeah.
imagine.
Yes.
Released all that tension.
Jeez,
of course, you had to have the Jack LaLanne cutout laminated.
That's true, unless you want to.
It's easier to clean that way.
He single-handedly keeps Amazon's nanocloth storefront in business.
That's right, baby.
Leading those things are remarkable if you haven't used
fantastic.
Them. Nanocloth. It's like a microfiber cloth.
Yeah.
Times a million.
Yeah.
It's just
okay.
take anyway. It doesn't matter.
Super micro.
Leading the news. Of course, you know attorney, and we're gonna get into Venezuela. That's the most.
Oh yes.
We have
yeah.
to talk about Barr because
yes.
we have to.
Yes.
But Venezuela,
absolutely.
I think, is
we have a job
week,
to do.
So
yes.
William Barr. He didn't attend the House Judiciary hearing today, for Thursday, those who are listening to the archive. Now, the main reason was a dispute over who'd be doing the questioning.
Yeah.
And he felt that he left it all on stage yesterday. And since we already analyzed it yesterday for Mug Club members and the Ash Wednesday, and you're yeah. probably tired of hearing about it, we're just, well, that brings us to Bill Barr's Def Comedy Jam. All right, so if you like expect an analysis,
yeah,
yeah.
we ain't got it
yeah.
though,
yeah.
because
yeah.
this
not
is just like the greatest hits for people who missed it for Bill Barr. Let's go to
our
Bill
boy.
Barr's
let's
greatest
do it.
Hits,
let's do
my
it.
Boy, Senator Blumenthal, clip one.
Yeah. Did anyone, either you or anyone on your staff,
memorialize your conversation with Robert Mueller?
Yes.
Who did that?
There were notes taken of the call.
May we have those notes?
No.
Oh! Damn, son! You just got knocked the f*** out!
I didn't know
had the power to make the decision about whether or not the evidence was sufficient to make a determination of whether there had been an obstruction of justice.
Prosecution memos go up to the supervisor. In this case, it was the, you know, the attorney general and the deputy attorney general who decide on the final decision. And that is based on the memo as presented by the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Oh! He just showed you, bitch! He showed you, bitch!
I just want to nail down, you used the word spying about authorized DOJ investigative activities.
Frankly, we went back and looked at press usage, and up until all the FOIA outrage a couple of weeks ago, it's commonly used in the press to refer to authorized activities, such as referring to the FISA court as the spy court.
But it's not commonly used by the department.
What?
It is not commonly used by the department. My time is
commonly used by me.
Okay, I'm not gonna lie. I'm a little winded.
Man,
how's it going, man?
A person of color is exhausting.
It's difficult, yes.
This is awesome.
Oh man.
Man, that was good.
Wow, everything is so bright now. Okay, so for people, we could just don't. Now is just Brodigan is just making all the noise. Like, you want to ruffle some chip bags into the microphone?
Yeah. ASMR.
I was gonna put the sunglasses back on. So I don't know what happened.
We talked about this yesterday. This is just, we don't want to provide a full on analysis because everyone's been doing it. But yesterday I said, watch, you're going to see tomorrow. The clips are going to be Kamala Harris and Hirono, and everyone's going to be saying this is the ownage. This is the ownage because it's a sound bite. But none of it is true. That's what matters. I think we have Harris or just Hirono?
Hirono.
Okay, this is the one. I want to show you the clip that the left has been showing as their big victory lap. For context, here's Hirono in questioning.
Do you think all of the things that President Trump did are okay?
I don't think
this is not a crime, but do you think it's okay for the president
to do
what he did?
The investigation was about illegality.
Now, do you think it's okay for the president
to do what he did? And I don't think the evidence supports the proposition.
So I guess you think it's okay
to stop the investigation.
Do you think it's okay for a president to ask his White House counsel to lie?
Which
look, if you're just going to go back to where the
which event are you
talking? You're telling me that it's okay. Let me ask you: do you think it's okay for a president to offer pardons to people who don't testify against him, to threaten the family of someone?
What are you talking about?
Does is that okay?
When did he offer a pardon to someone?
I think you know what I'm talking about. Please, Mr. Attorney General, you know, give us some credit for knowing what the hell is going on around here with you.
Not really.
I give you no credit.
No, not at all,
Hirono.
That's ballsy right there.
Hold on. Can you give me any specifics? Okay, stop with the games. Who likes that? Does this matter? You play game now. You don't play game here. Hold on a second. Is that a racial stereotype? Possibly. And then Kamala Harris asked a question. She asked him, she said, did Donald Trump or the White House ask you to investigate anybody? What? What kind of a question? And they're going, look at this. Oh, someone actually did the succinct and pointed questions of Kamala Harris. It could not be less poignant.
Nice. And the Dems just won't let go of this. Like, she obviously has been caught right there. She, give us some credit for knowing what we're talking about. No, you get no credit.
Not at all.
This is a losing strategy for you guys. How do you think this is a win to keep getting owned like this on national television?
By the way, I saw on the Young Turks, they were talking about this, and they said, we agree with the report that maybe there's no collusion, but there could have been obstruction. That's it. Could have been obstruction.
Hold on a second.
If you say there's no collusion, you agree. How can there be obstruction? And they're arguing now, his business ties with Russia. Hold on a second. That's not what you called an investigation for.
No.
You want to set that kind of precedent where someone pulls you over for a broken taillight? Oh, wait, your taillight's not broken. Yeah, but I want to bring you into the shop because I think maybe you hit your kid. Do you have any proof? No.
We know.
You called for an investigation.
Yeah.
It's been done. He's not. Well, no, let's go to business. They never want to stop. That's the point. Yeah. That's why I don't want to analyze it. He is the smartest guy in the room, though, and I did enjoy watching it. Here's your other hot take of the week. According to Yahoo, Game of Thrones, they keep killing off the entire immigrant populations.
Oh.
And that's a problem.
Apparently. I mean, they're not wrong. Until they all died.
If they killed off the show, that'd be okay.
Yeah,
oh,
at this point
on
Team White Walker, where once it seemed like the show had something to say about the topic of immigration, I'm no longer sure it's interested in such heady ideas anymore. Yahoo, spoiler alert, you're going to hate episode 6. Yeah, that's not.
Oh my gosh, the article goes on to say, it makes a really good point. Maybe there was a wall for a reason. They didn't understand the threat on the other side of the wall. And I'm like, huh, that's like real life right now.
Well, wasn't it to keep out the gingers because it's a recessive gene
pretty
and they taint your gene pool?
You don't want to have that.
I'm actually curious what a White Walker taco would taste like.
I have no idea.
Very cold.
I'm not sure.
I imagine they would stay away from the spice.
I don't think a show like that is supposed to be talking about those ideas anyway. They weren't making any kind of a point.
This has gotten way too analytical for something that was meant to be stupid. International. By the way, people listening on audio, we get email. Just watch it, okay? Yes. What is this? It doesn't make any sense. In international news anyway, a club is now teaching young boys how to be alpha males in order to fight K-pop's influence in China.
Right. Hey, I agree with this.
This comes from the LA Times.
I agree with this.
Tang Haiyan founded the Real Man Training Club to combat China's masculinity crisis, part of the backlash against the makeup and earring-wearing male TV, film, and K-pop idols. Leave it to China. And Haiyan's methods are actually being called controversial, particularly given his policy of hunting down and executing the entire cast of Glee. So that seems as though...
Oh, wow. I was about to say
that original Photoshop, it was so close with the crying kid from Glee, we had to zoom in.
To me, the funniest thing about that picture actually goes back to the pitch room where you were like, what about the gay guy from Glee? You need to be more specific.
Right, yeah, pretty much.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of everybody from Glee.
Yeah, one of the guys was actually quoting, he said 20% of the people were, men, were unfit for military service, and he went on to list like things that matter, you know, like they couldn't run, they were out of shape, they were watching too many YouTube videos, and they... too much. And I was like, well, what was
the article?
Why is that the thing that ends up on the line,
they
like, strip off, for service?
They strip off his badges? That's because you a wanker! You go home, like, on your own time! You bring great shame with wanking!
Oh, God. And we're supposed
to... And Hirono's like, do you think it's good to wank?
And the funny thing is, we're supposed to be concerned that China is going to take over the world.
They're too busy
watching videos and
they do have a lot. Well, if they're getting rid of them, that must mean it's the exception. So they have a lot of time on their hands. Ooh, speaking of which, Moby, in his new memoir, he says that he was drinking heavily to process his grief over 9/11. Jeez. And he claims that he rubbed his Doniger on President Donald Trump. This comes from Daily Beast. He said, I drank a shot of vodka to brace myself, pulled my flaccid P word out of my pants, and casually walked past Trump, trying to brush the edge of his jacket with my wiener. Luckily, he didn't seem to notice. And actually, we uncovered exclusive audio from the concert in question.
Oh, wow.
Duh. Duh. Wubbite.
Oh, gross. And immediately, copyright from Moby.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
That was instant.
The funny thing is, he's talking about, like, he's drinking, he's doing drugs, he's having sex in tetanus-y bathrooms, so he's doing all of these things, and then says that Donald Trump is the bad person in this story.
Right, yeah.
You're out doing all these things, and Trump's the bad guy?
That's gross, man.
And you rubbed your penis on him?
Why? Because he cut AIDS funding.
Right, yeah. You're doing illegal drugs, sleeping with random people, and drunk for 3 months.
And you suck. Moby, that's the only song anyone
that's
remembers
the
from
main
Moby.
Thing
My mom
suck.
Worked with Moby on the French-Canadian Patrice Lécrier show. With
so
Lit, and
she's
he,
to blame.
He came in, and he was a jerk back then. Yeah, brother.
I just find it funny that this is the first time you've heard Moby's name since like he got dissed by Eminem in the diss track.
Right.
And he still is the one who looks like a douche in the situation.
Right. pretty much. Which, by the way, not only is that sexual assault, but honestly, I don't really know how it's an insult to the person who is unwilling. He's the only unwilling participant. You rubbed your penis on another man.
And not to mention...
That's embarrassing for you. Not for him.
Isn't that something you would like do in elementary school or something like that? Yeah. Like,
where did you go to grade school?
Apparently a lot tougher place than you did. If you got a penis rubbed on you, it was on you.
Yeah, you know, kindergarten...
I don't know if I'd call that tough.
You know.
So, it was Neverland Academy. What are you talking about?
Were your teachers the village people?
Exactly.
What school did you go to?
No, but if you did something stupid like that...
I got punched. Did you ever once have somebody rub their schmeckle on you?
No, no, but I think kindergarten is his code word for honeymoon.
Yes, that's fair.
I had somebody try to like put the, like if you had your hand on your hip in the locker room or something like that, somebody would come up and like do it. It'd be funny to their friends. You know what I mean? Like they try to touch you and you're like, oh, get away from me. You don't remember stuff like that?
No. No.
You're telling me that story.
An Oxford professor now is arguing that invisible cut out of Jacqueline Lane. Invisible aliens.
Damn you.
Are interbreeding with humans. This comes from
this is important.
Oxford student Dr. Young Hae Chi. In case we didn't have all the Asians mad at us yet. In his 55-minute presentation, he cited an abduction researcher in the U.S. who argued that aliens' primary purpose is to colonize the Earth by interbreeding with humans to produce a new hybrid species. Right. Second-generation hybrids are, according to Jacobs, walking unobserved among us. He also went on to note that he is single. Of course, some suspect ulterior motives given his recent launch of Invisible Aliens to have sex with Match.com.
Oh,
it seems as though there is a conflict of interest, which, unfortunately for him, most of all, proved to be unfruitful. Yeah, that's pretty...
Hey, everybody gets blocked every once in a while.
I just don't think he's my type. Long walks on the beach? Could you be less original?
Jeez. I just have one request. If there's an Alf comeback, it's because of this show.
I hope so.
Yeah.
There was an Alf comeback, wasn't there?
I thought there was.
If there's a second Alf comeback, it's because of the show.
I really wanted Alf to be better than it was. That's how everyone feels.
I think you're looking
Alf.
Back with rose-colored glasses on that show.
You look back, it is paint by numbers that don't even line up.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, well, hold on a second. This is a number. This has three digits. It only goes up to six. That's how bad Alf is.
Yeah. Isn't this the kind of story, though, that you do, the kind of article that you write that gets you punted from all kinds of academia? Like, you're never allowed back
in? It should
in.
Be.
Not in academia.
This should be rewarded for it.
Right? This should
That's
be.
Because, no, you misunderstand. He actually studied the relation between interdimensional invisible aliens hybridizing with humans in relation to climate change. So,
$4 million
grant.
There you go. Yes. Makes sense.
By the way, the winner of last week's trivia contest is Andrew Morales at DJAM32, who knew that Brodigan dressed up as Spider-Man.
I knew that
Oscars
one too, but I wasn't eligible.
You were not. Isn't Morales, isn't that the Spider-Man in the
Morales.
Cartoon one?
It's Miles.
Miles.
Oh, okay.
Miles Morales.
It's a great movie.
Okay, just a Latino name. All right, which brings us to the top five lessons learned from Venezuela. Let me ask you this. What have you learned most from the story unfolding in Venezuela? Everyone's been talking about Barr. This has been a little lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
Nothing surprising.
No, right. Exactly. They've really taught us a lot. So obviously they've reached a boiling point, right?
Yeah.
The citizens have been staging massive demonstrations against the dictator Maduro. And by the way, how do you pronounce the name of the legitimate president?
Oh gosh, I don't know.
Well, I know
Trump.
Is it? We'll just say Juan. His last name is very hard for me to pronounce properly. Juan, President Juan. Gaudo?
I don't know.
But anyway, there have been demonstrations going on, obviously, against dictator Maduro, who is not recognized. So Juan, the other guy, recognized as the interim president by both the United States, this is important to note, and other nations. Actually, I think we have a clip and a freeze here to show you what's going on. We just froze.
Yeah.
We can't show it because they've been running over dissidents with tanks. And Maduro is, for people who haven't been following, let me give you a brief kind of history lesson. He's a socialist turned dictator, but I repeat myself.
Is that better?
Slaughtering civilians. And this is what's so important. People say, well, no, this is an example of pure socialism, okay?
Yeah.
The most tragic thing here is that it is entirely predictable. This isn't the first time this kind of a government has run people over with tanks.
No, it happens all the time. Armored personnel carriers in that state, but it doesn't matter. They ran them over.
Right. And I was going to say, like, the most disturbing thing is, like, what's going on, actually going on in Venezuela now is the stuff that we say sarcastically to socialists in this country that it's going to turn into.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And before you say that it's not true socialism, let me walk you through the top lessons we've learned as to why it is. Lesson number five, by the way, is that democratic socialists are going to hate lessons 4 through 1. Hit the notification bell.
And the bandwidth
mark the page. Join up at Mug Club, by the way, because we're hitting... Yeah. Everything's demonetized now. Of course, subscribe on iTunes. So the fourth lesson that I think is most important here is that socialism doesn't work. And I know this is a lot of people say, well, this isn't... No, hold on a second. We're not talking about places like Venezuela. Actually, do you know how I know you... Bernie Sanders and celebrities have long praised Venezuela and other South American socialist countries.
Yeah.
What they did it when their economies... seemed to work.
Way back in, what was it, 1961, they invaded Cuba. and everybody was totally convinced that Castro was the worst guy in the world, that all the Cuban people were going to rise up in rebellion against Fidel Castro.
Right.
They forgot that he educated their kids, gave them health care, totally transformed the society.
Them.
You know, it's funny, sometimes American journalists talk about how bad a country is because people are lining up for food. That's a good thing. In other countries, people don't line up for food.
But
the rich get
difference.
The food, and the poor starve to death.
Oh, he doesn't understand. His view is skewed because there's no lineup in the prune juice aisle. By the way, when people argue that it's not real, do you know how I know that it's not true? Still today, okay? Bernie still has an article on his website today, right now, that claims Venezuelans are living the American dream better than those in the United States.
Today!
Right now! And I guarantee you, after this show, they'll probably wait 2 weeks until this blows over and then remove it, and then you can time machine go back to today, right now, this Thursday. What's the date?
May 2nd.
May 2nd
still says on Bernie Sanders' website, official website, that Venezuelans are living the American dream.
Is that lining up for a toilet paper and having to eat dogs because you're starving to death? I don't remember that being the American
dream. The idea, you cannot simply say it's not real socialism because it doesn't work now. You praised it. Bernie still praises it. This is what you wanted. It's what you got. It's over. You're done. Screw your attempted pivot to Denmark. They don't want you.
I don't want you. Yeah. I don't love you. But I will give you one more chance.
Yes, sir.
The irony of all ironies here is that Bernie Sanders is setting up that capitalists are the worst people, right? Rich capitalists are the people that you have to hate. They're the ones that are taking from the economy.
Not that you have to hate, they're the worst people, but he does vilify them more than socialist government. He does give the benefit of the doubt. He assumes altruism to socialists.
They're the villain in the story, right? And he's supposed to be the heroine coming in to save you. He becomes the villain if his system, right? He becomes that same villain, right? Because who ends up with all the power, money, and control? The people in government. Yeah. And who are the people that end up taking advantage of everybody else once they get that power? Right. The people in government.
That's why it's 1%. Important when people say democratic socialism. By the way, Maduro was elected.
Yeah.
If you say it was a special election because Chavez died, fine. So did Chavez was elected.
You asked for this, the scales
were tipped a little bit by endorsements from one Jeff Spicoli and Bernie Sanders. Still, pretty fair and free.
Yeah.
Leftists, you can't blame this on corrupt leaders.
No.
When your system, this is what the system of socialism is what grants them unbridled power in the first place.
Exactly.
The fact that a socialist turns into a dictator because you created the sole environment where he can become an all-powerful dictator is your fault.
Yes.
And we already did a video debunking John Oliver's lies, specifically on Venezuela, why it failed. You can watch it on the channel. But let me give you kind of a brief summary for people who understand. They try and say, well, it's about the economy. No, okay. Venezuela, most oil-rich country in the world. More so than Saudi Arabia. A lot of people don't know this.
Yeah.
Chavez had the state run the oil industry instead of investing it back into the oil industry, investing profits
or in the economy to grow other sectors.
They used it to pay for a ton of socialist programs. That's why people liked them for a while, creating a bubble that burst when the oil market didn't do that well. So when people say it's all about oil, no. What was a road bump for the capitalist economies was an absolute disaster for Venezuela.
Train wreck.
So before these protests, this is what's important to note. Right now, you see them being run over with tanks and shot by their government. Yeah. It seems severe. But before this, they were starving. They were digging through trash for food.
Yeah.
Freddy Mata says it is the only way he can eat.
No. At least we have not died of hunger.
While he dislikes having to do this, he says he finds food that is edible.
So socialism doesn't just kill people by running them down with tanks or shit. It starves them first.
Yeah. Right. Well, and socialism presumes that there is this benevolent class of geniuses out there that are able to run the economy and take care of everybody better than anybody else would be, right? History has never shown that to be the case. Anyone that gets into power and has power like that historically has always, like you said, led to being a dictator and killing their citizens.
That's why I can't stand West Wing. Every time you watch it, they just assume that everyone who happens to work for Martin Sheen has it
brilliant.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Why is that the case? Where does that come from? You've never seen an example of that in history. Why would you think it would happen now?
They didn't do it right.
Yes.
But they're
doing it they're doing it the way you told them to do it.
Crap. I don't mean a successful socialist country.
Do
I mean a leader.
Do you think it's nice to hold Bernie Sanders to his own words?
That's just mean.
Give us credit for knowing what we're talking about. You don't. You know nothing.
This is important. And I don't want to be simplistic, so let me back this up. Gun rights are necessary for a free society.
Essential.
So here you can see someone on MSNBC actually admitting that Venezuelans are completely powerless because they don't have gun rights.
You have to understand, in Venezuela, gun ownership is not something that is open to everybody. So if the military have the guns, they have the power. And as long as Nicolas Maduro controls the military, he controls the country.
Uh-oh, did I just say that out loud?
That would never happen here, though. Come on. That would never happen here.
Was that Tucker Carlson in a fat suit?
How did that make air?
And here's the thing. I know what people are going to say. People have been saying this nonstop on social media. Like, and it's what they call the reverse Nirvana fallacy. I think they call it that in either rhetoric, logic, or philosophy. It's hard to know which is taught in college. I remember I learned about this in college. Hold on a second. If they had guns, do you think it would fix the problem here? The government has tanks. Okay, hold on a second. Before we get into the statistics, let me ask you this. Do you think it's a better scenario that citizens are being defenselessly run over by tanks from their government as opposed to a civil war scenario where they fight back? So because they're completely defenseless right now and they're getting bazooka'd to high heaven, you think they should have no way to defend themselves? I don't understand the argument. And by the way, it's also incorrect. With an unarmed population, Maduro is barely hanging on to power.
Yeah.
Okay? If you dumped 300 million guns into the mix, he'd be through.
Yeah, they're doing great with rocks and bottles right now. Can you imagine if they were armed in any way?
This is the idea. It's like, well, they would just nuke. Well, no. There's a ground war that needs to be fought. And right now, they are fighting without guns. And the Second Amendment is designed specifically. This is where people miss it when they talk about it being hunting. I know I sound like a broken record, but it's designed specifically to prevent this kind of government from even attempting this sort of tyranny.
Yeah. Well, but that would never happen here.
Yeah, that's the next argument. It would never happen here. Let's just make sure that we have no fail-safe. Take the United States, for example. If you look at the numbers, we have a population of 320-something million people. Okay, we have 300-something million guns. I think it's over 30%. Oh, yeah, too cute Maddie has the overlay. It is. It's over 30% of households who own guns. Our total military population is just over 2 million. That's including active and reserve personnel.
Yeah.
There's no chance of the United States gunning down its people because they know the citizenry is so armed. It cannot happen. And if you think, you think that genocide is better in Venezuela than a civil war, I need to hear your argument when you say that guns in the hands of civilians wouldn't help. I just don't agree.
No, absolutely. You have to have some kind of a protection. If these people had guns, Maduro would have stopped a long time ago, knowing that they would have come after him if he made those kinds of decisions that led to the conditions they're in now. He would have had a check against him, even if it wasn't used.
Just like we have a historical precedent for all socialist, Marxist, communist governments doing this, do we have any kind of a precedent for armed populations fighting people? Well, Switzerland weren't invaded during World War II, and I know some of you will say, well, they had a geographical advantage because of the mountainous regions. Okay, but you know what? Let's use another example. Direct quote from Japanese military. When they were asked why they didn't invade the United States after Pearl Harbor, said, there would have been a gun behind every blade of grass. By the way, Japanese very flowery. What's your excuse, Hirono? Don't you think I know how to do poetry? Give me credit. I give you no credit. Swine. None
whatsoever.
This is what's so important. It's so predictable. There's nothing unique about Venezuela. If you could find an exception. No, all big government and socialist leaders disarm their citizens.
Yes.
Soviet Union, Cuba, Nazi Germany. Socialism, disarmament is the rule. Not the exception.
Yeah.
In every case.
Yeah. And one of the things, I'm baffled at how people are forgetting recent military history. Vietnam.
Right.
Vietnam. Think about this. Insurgents will always outlast an invading. Always. Yeah. You know why?
Because the Taliban.
They're not centralized. Wouldn't they nuke them? Fine. They would nuke a city. There's millions more. We're not centralized all standing in one place saying we're going to fight you from here.
Right.
It is one of the most impossible tasks. Look at Afghanistan. 10 years, 15 years later. We're still trying to take care of an insurgency.
Right.
Right? Yeah. So we would absolutely...
And we can't. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure we'll talk with Senator Rand Paul after the break, and he'll tell us that I know he doesn't think we should still be there because he thinks it's unwinnable. Yeah. But say something, Brodigan.
That was because, I mean...
That's a good point.
I mean, to contradict Joe a little bit, when you think U.S. history only started in January 2009, what's a Vietnam?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I understand that, but man...
Well, lesson number two. This one is kind of an aside, but I wanted to include it. Is we learned that Trump isn't a Russian stooge.
Oh, really?
My important one, though. So this is really simple. Putin has supported Maduro openly and repeatedly. Yeah. Maduro was actually readying a plane. Did you know that to escape to Cuba?
Yeah, he was out.
Before the Russians convinced him not to. And
I don't know how.
Back in January, Trump issued a statement officially recognizing Juan, however you pronounce it, as the interim president of Venezuela.
Guaido.
And by the way, it's also important to note that Russia's had cozy relations with Cuba. And if you look at Donald Trump and Bolton and their not only their sanctions, but their rhetoric on Cuba. Again, this just backs it up. But if you don't believe me, And I don't think you should believe me. You should never
believe me. Hold your feet to the fire.
Don't believe me. Believe your lying eyes and believe your lying ears. Here's President Trump meeting with one other guy's wife, telling her that her husband is 100% the president. When asked about Russia, by the way, he couldn't be more clear.
We are with Venezuela. We are with your husband, as you know, and you're with the people that he represents, which is a big, big majority of the country.
There comes. What sort of complications does the Russian involvement now pose?
Russia has to get out.
What?
All right, what's your next question?
Someone's in the Kremlin's
pocket. Whoa! That's awesome.
What do you think about Russia? Scrub. Okay.
They gotta get out. Like,
it couldn't be more forceful. Yeah, Brian.
No, I mean, I'm just thinking about this now. When Trump did this, didn't Cortez, Omar, and like the three stooges like attack him for it? Like, why are you getting involved? We shouldn't be intervening.
I think you're thinking about Omar ranting about the Jews. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You're getting it confused.
Well, hold on. I'm a little confused here.
I think you're right. They did, yeah.
I have a legitimate question. So if Russia is this socialist, Marxist, whatever, like the alternative to capitalist society over here that they want to usher in, wouldn't they want Donald Trump to be a stooge of the Russians so that it would happen here? Why are they so opposed to the Russia connection if Russia has helped communism spread around the world,
exactly,
and socialism by extension?
It's so confusing to me.
Right. Wouldn't they want that? Why are they fighting against that so much and tarring him like that?
Because you're a racist.
Well, hey, listen. No.
None of this makes any sense to me.
Hey, come on. I'm the host. Give me credit that I know a little bit what I'm talking about here.
No.
Well, hold on. Can you give me specifics? I relinquish my time.
Here's the final lesson.
You have 4 minutes and 59 seconds left, sir.
Not only does socialism not work, but the macro really works. Socialism is outright evil. And I've talked about this many times.
Yes.
It's not compassionate.
No.
Maduro's army, they're running people down in the streets, shooting them.
Yeah.
This is where socialism always ends. How is there any question as to this being pure evil? Venezuela, again, it's not an outlier.
Nope.
For the 20th century, socialist Marxist regimes have killed over 100 million people. Tell that to your edgy atheist friend who talks about all religions being fought in the name, all wars being fought in the name of religion.
Yes.
And I don't understand. Please answer me. How is this a surprise to anyone? If only we had the literal exact comparison of a Marxist out of control government running over dissidents with tanks in the history books. Is it possible?
Somewhere, maybe.
You starting to get the picture? And this is the issue. We have to go to Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, in a little bit. Socialism, it can only function with an entirely powerless and entirely defenseless society. The two are different things. When I say powerless, I mean people who are reliant on the government for their health care, reliant on the government for their education, reliant on the government for their welfare, for their ability to live. You suck the soul straight from somebody's body. And when I talk about defenseless, I'm talking about systematic disarmament. And one, of course, precedes the other. This is one thing, too, that you can't, I think Thomas Sowell talked about this, you can't blame the leaders who seize control that you've willingly given to them. At some point, maybe it was democratic, but guess what? At some point, it's not going to be. Let's not say Bernie Sanders is a Maduro. I don't think he would be. Maybe not the next guy, but it could be the next guy and the next guy and the next guy, and you're too far in because you're dependent on the government based on these policies because you thought you were getting a gimme. And let me something else here that I think is important to note. Capitalism is not flawless. No one here is arguing that. Free enterprise, of course, has its problems. But if I'm wrong, and this is the issue, the idea of dispersing power, of it not being centralized. If I'm wrong and Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos are corrupt and they become like Maduro's, you know what? Thousands of people lose their jobs. The economy is going to do pretty poorly. Yeah, it'll be catastrophic economically for a lot of people. If you're wrong, people get starved and run over with tanks. So if you're going to take the lesser of two evils, let me know what you pick. We have Senator Rand Paul after the break.
Yeah.
Let's all try some waffle. Let's all try some waffle. Let's all try some waffle because they are badass.
Walther Firearms. Quality firearm engineering for over a century. Sleek lines, butter smooth triggers, and unparalleled reliability. Walther created the first semi-automatic pistol in 1908, and they've made the best ever since. So the next chance you have, demand loudly and proudly, I'll try the Walther.
Let's all try some Walther, because they are best.
Hello there, YouTube viewer. I'm here with my dungeon sex slave half-Asian Tattoo, here to tell you about Mug Club and why you should join to support this content.
What the safe word, boss? Wojcicki?
Oh, my dear half-Asian Tattoo. We don't use safe words, and neither should you, behind the paywall at louderwithcrowder.com/mugclub, where everything is fair game. Join, or I'll drown him in a bathtub.
Like you asked, that how many genders there are, we don't need to define that. There can be an infinite number of genders. It's all about what you define. I could go around wearing a dress if that's what I particularly wanted to
but
do.
Are you still a boy then? Because you have a penis, I don't assume.
Open your mind. Let us begin our quest to find...
Hey, Quarter Blackheart, what is pop locking exactly?
Pop locking.
Is it different from
it's
the
like,
robot?
It's like some.
It's more like. Is it more?
Yeah.
Like some it's like the robot, like, but
you pop lock it.
But you're dislocating joints.
Pop it. Then you lock
it. I don't know. Seems to be like a cultural blind spot for myself.
And myself.
I need to check that out. I'm very glad to have our next guest. We've had so many requests for him to be on. He's obviously immensely popular with a lot of younger political activists, particularly millennials who are conservatives. His brand of conservatism, I guess. I would want him to represent himself, but really seems to resonate with him. You can follow him on the Twitter at Rand Paul. In case you don't know who it is, we'll be talking about his introduced plan called the Penny Plan to balance the budget, among other things. Senator Rand Paul, thank you for being here, sir.
Well, thank you. But if they follow me on the Twitter, would that be on the internet?
It would be, yes.
At Walmart?
Correct. So long as it remains neutrality. Yeah, that's.
I wanted to make sure where they would go to the Twitter.
To the Twitter. Yeah, the Twitter and the YouTubes and the books of faces where that Game of Thrones girl also learns to become an assassin, I think. Not entirely clear. You're probably more in touch than I am, Senator. You seem to really have your finger to the pulse of what's going on online.
Well, we have discovered today, have you seen the new White Walker calendar?
No, it sounds horrifying in the sense that people who would purchase it sound horrifying.
Well, the White Walker calendar has Senate Republicans depicted as White Walkers.
Oh.
It's sort of some creative photoshopping. It's actually quite good. You might want to get your hands on it.
No, I'm not going to lie. I don't mean this in any of the demonic undead sense, but because of the white hair and the lighter eyes, wouldn't require too creative photoshopping to make you a White Walker.
Oh, no, but I'm on the good side. There's good and evil, and I think it just the evil is being depicted as white. So whoever made this must not have thought I was evil enough.
I'm on the White Walker side anyways.
Yeah, you know, at a certain point when the storylines get all muddled, I'm like, you know what? I just want this whole thing to fall. first off, before we get to the Penny Plan, which is incredibly interesting, I think people would love to hear about it. I know you've been busy. Have you been following the Barr hearing this week? What's your take on that?
Just peripherally, and a lot of people have been talking about it on the floor of the Senate. You know, I wasn't part of the hearings.
Right.
But, I've been hearing from Lindsey Graham and others that it seems like the other side sort of lost it. I mean, maybe just went completely bonkers, you know, over Barr, yelling and screaming at him, calling him a liar. And I guess from my point of view, it sounds like that even Mueller doesn't dispute anything that Barr said. Everything Barr said was accurate. He just wanted more released of, I guess, his narrative that he wrote about the whole thing. But I guess my point of view on the whole Mueller report and the whole reveal is that if you're not indicted for something, the government shouldn't release anything.
Right.
You know, I was against the Mueller report, and the same would go for Hillary Clinton. I actually think Comey did a disservice to all of us, including the FBI, when he came forward and said, oh, we're not indicting her. But she really seems guilty as hell on these three different things.
Right.
The government shouldn't do that. Because think about it from your perspective or an ordinary citizen's perspective, that if the government accused you of a terrible crime that would make you a pariah in your whole community, but then it turns out you didn't commit it, would you want the government to say, Stephen Crowles did not commit this horrendous crime, and yet we're going to write a 400-page narrative describing all the things that he might have done that we think are kind of shady, but he didn't commit the horrendous crime.
I wouldn't want the government writing a 400-page report on what I've done today before lunch. I'd be incredibly embarrassed, and I don't think you would appear on this program. But that was actually going to be my first question, because you blocked a resolution calling for the release of the Mueller report. And listen, you're obviously seen as an advocate for government transparency. You're kind of seen as that candidate, the torchbearer, if you will. So for those folks not in the know, you know, you explained also when you blocked this resolution, also, that it was important to understand the origins of where the investigation began. So for people who might say, well, I'm surprised Senator Rand Paul blocked this. Why didn't you want the report released? Explain the context.
See, I'm an advocate for individual liberty. And so I'm an advocate for the individual. And I'm an advocate for government being controlled and restrained from what it can do to individuals. So I look at a prosecution where they do not find something that they can actually prove someone is guilty of, that the individual deserves the protection, that not the government. There isn't an overriding sort of, oh, we must be transparent about something that could destroy an individual where we didn't actually have proof that they committed a crime. So I think in this case, the individual's rights would trump any sort of argument for transparency. Now, in general, should the government try to be transparent? Sure.
Sure.
But really, it's always about how big is the government, what does the government do to the individual, and what do we do to protect the individual from a government that might grow too large. And this is what I told the president. I was with the president this weekend. We played golf. And I said, they've mistreated you. The intelligence agencies have mistreated you. The special prosecutor has. But my advice is that he needs to generalize this and talk about what would happen, for example, if the government could look at all the tax returns of everyone they didn't like, a political enemies list.
Right.
So Republicans get mad. They look at all the Democrats' tax returns. Democrats get mad. They look at Republicans. Or what if we had special prosecutors for everybody? And so we don't know that there's a crime you've committed, but we say, you know, what we do is we have a person and we're going to look for wrongdoing. That really is an injustice. And it's important that people realize and remember that there's a burden on the government to prove guilt. And that's a tough burden. We do it intentionally because we want to give any kind of degree of doubt to the individual. We want to make the government have a bigger burden. Their burden is to prove guilt.
Right.
And one way Mueller really screwed up in this report is Mueller failed in the one sense of understanding that the burden of guilt comes to the government, because he says at one point, oh, but we cannot exonerate the president. I think he actually uses those words.
Right.
Well, that's not his business. And it's not the business of government to exonerate. The business of government is to overcome a hurdle. And it's his burden of proof to prove someone's guilt. Because if we had to prove everyone innocent, it's like, oh, well, I'm pretty sure Stephen didn't do that, and we're not going to indict you, but I can't absolutely say that Stephen's completely innocent of all crime.
Right.
The innuendo of that and the government's full force and power, it's a terrible power. We have to be very careful. And I've decided I won't ever vote for a special prosecutor because I don't think it's the right justice. We have grand juries. We have normal prosecutors. But we don't need special prosecutors that go through everybody's life from the beginning of time.
That's a very good point. And that leads to the innuendo of, you know, Donald Trump angrily tweeting or saying, I didn't do anything. And them saying, hold on a second. Is that obstruction? Right. It leads to that. Well, hold on a second. If there's no crime, how can we now declare it to be obstruction? And it really does become a slippery slope. And I'm amazed at the media coverage of this.
Right. And I think you're exactly right. How can you obstruct something that wasn't a crime? And actually, no one's actually saying he did obstruct anything. There's nothing he actually did that stopped the wheels from turning. The Mueller investigation went forward, $35 million worth. You know, I don't know where there was actual obstruction. Did people talk about ways we can try to get the stupid Mueller investigation over? I think they did talk about that.
Right.
But there was no crime, and it turns out it was a false allegation. So if you're falsely accused of something and you try to get the charges dismissed, and you work hard to make sure that whoever's trying to accuse you of the false crimes doesn't succeed, are you obstructing justice? Are you actually helping and abetting justice?
Or even it gets to the point, you know, where Barr answered a question from, I think it was Kamala Harris. Yes, it was Kamala Harris. And she asked a question. She said, has the president, I want to make sure I get this correct, has the president or anyone else instructed you to investigate anybody? And they're trying to act as though that's an own. I'm going, wait. And Barr said, I'm grappling with the word anyone else. It's like asking, hold on, have you, Senator Rand Paul, or anyone else ever said anything bad about anyone. And then if you say, I don't think so, is that obstruction? It seems like they're going to more generalized questions. If you look at the hearing, it was no longer about legality. It was about if he's a nice guy or not.
Right. Well, I think they're getting at whether the president has asked them to investigate the investigators, the ones who came up with this fake dossier, should they? And I think they should, because I think it's very important that we had the head of the CIA, John Brennan, who swore under testimony that he never saw this dossier till January. Well, he had a task force for 6 months looking into this and had members of the FBI on his team. You think he never saw one of those letters from Christopher Steele? I think he's parsing words. And this is the kind of stuff that they'll do to you. The dossier wasn't a dossier until they put all the letters together. Right. Before that, there was 20 individual letters. So I think you read the letters, and then when they were put together in a folder and called a dossier, you said, well, I have not seen the dossier.
Obstruction!
You know, but really, so much of this originated in government. Government took a dossier that no one would believe, and to get people to believe it, they gave it to people like John McCain, who then gave it back to the government. The FBI's got, well, John McCain gave us this dossier. Well, we already had it, but he gave it back to us, and now we need to investigate because a senator has given us what we already had that we gave to him to begin with.
Well, look what we found in Senator Rand Paul's recycling bin. You put it there. Let's not get into details here. Let me ask you this, because you've obviously been a critic of President Trump in the past, and I think you've supported, I think you've been very fair. What is it like? You said you played golf with him. Is it tense at all? Do you have a good working relationship together?
You know, we get along pretty well. We both love the game of golf, which helps. He's very competitive, and so we have a good competitive round usually when we play. And really, it doesn't get overly serious. But I can tell you through the round and being around him a long time and hearing his statements that I'm very encouraged by some of his sentiments and his instincts. And I'll give you an example. In the State of the Union, he said that great nations don't fight perpetual wars. I couldn't agree more. None of the Bushes would have ever said that. None of the establishment Republicans would have ever said that. It takes somebody who hasn't been muddled and drugged down by all of the establishment neoconservative rhetoric to say something like that. But it's exactly what I believe.
Right.
That nations don't fight perpetual war. And in private and in public, when I talk to him, he says that he wants to be the president that gets, you know, that ends some of these wars. In Afghanistan, we're spending $50 billion a year. There's not a general left at the Pentagon who actually believes that there is a military solution in Afghanistan. So I don't want to send the last kid or send one of my family members over there to fight in a war where every general is saying there is no military solution. We're going to take one more village so we can have a better negotiated settlement. Look, if the people over there don't want their current government, they're going to get rid of them. And frankly, the current government's full of a bunch of thieves, drug warlords. They grow more poppy in Afghanistan than they ever have, even though the U.S. government and the taxpayer spend $8 billion trying to wipe out their poppy crop. They grow more than they've ever grown.
Right.
I mean, it's a complete waste. You'd do better probably to burn the money if we just put it in a big bin and burned it.
Well, I actually knew a kid in high school who spent $800 on pop, but it was California poppy, which actually is not the same. He thought he was going to make poppy tea and get blitzed. And he was a very dumb person, never made it to college. But before I get to the penny plan, which is what I want to get to, you mentioned that. So I am curious, how does that go when you speak with the president on Syria, for example? Obviously, you've adamantly been calling for withdrawal of troops from Syria. Do you have those conversations?
You know, I think where there's agreement is that he believes that the Iraq war was a mistake, that toppling the Iraq regime made Iran stronger and made the Middle East, there's more unrest in the Middle East because of the Iraq war.
Right.
I think he thinks that leaving troops in Syria, that Syria is such a mess, will lead to more problems. Now, his advisors are neoconservatives and people who are the stay forever crowd. They've convinced him to leave 200. But I think actually leaving 200 is worse than leaving 20,000, frankly, because 20,000 aren't going to be picked off by a suicide bomber. 200 right. could. You know, it happened at the barracks in Beirut. Ronald Reagan decided, you know, this place is, you know, crazy over there and we're just not staying. And he brought the troops home from Lebanon. I think Trump has great instincts on that. And even at the very least, if he put them on, you know, I'm not for staying forever in Iraq also, but it'd be better to have them on a military base in Iraq than it would be in the middle of that war in between the Turks, the jihadists, which some on our side call allies. We armed jihadists.
Right.
Probably for 5 years, we sent arms to people who hate us, who would just soon skin us alive, who hate Israel. That's who we were sending arms to throughout that, because we thought they'd be better than Assad. I'm not positive that the people we were arming were any better or would be better than Assad.
It seems like it's always a struggle, because obviously when you think you're dealing with the worst evil, you ally yourself, you ally yourselves with the people who you think would do the least amount of damage, and then, you know, hindsight is 20/20. Okay, I do want to get to, because we could talk about this all day, and I really appreciate it, but the penny plan, your plan to balance the budget. For people who don't know, I know they can follow you on Twitter, they can go check it out on YouTube. Explain it to them.
We have a problem. A debt, $22 trillion debt. Every year now, we're adding about $1 trillion to it.
Seems statistically significant. I'm with you.
Approximately, we spend approximately $4 trillion, and we bring in about $3 trillion. Those are rounded numbers, but that's about it. And so what we would like to do is actually cut on the spending side. But we want people to realize that it actually wouldn't be as dramatic as people make it out to be. People are like, oh, it's too much. We can never do it. So nothing ever gets done, and everybody says, oh, we could never cut. So what I've come up with is a plan is to cut 1%. So 1% of 4 trillion is 40 billion.
Right.
Not so bad. You do it every year for 5 years. And for the last several years, if you did one penny a year for 5 years, the budget balanced. But because we don't do the penny plan, it's actually a little bit harder. So we actually, this year, we had to rename it. It's confusing marketing. We're having to call it the 2-penny plan.
Okay.
Now you have to spend 98% of what you spent last year, but you do it for 5 years. But here's the rub, and it leads to one of the big lies of Washington. So when I present this, and when the media reports it, they'll say that I'm cutting $10 trillion. And I'm telling you it's $40 billion. So how do we figure out the difference? Government is increasing at about 6 or 7% a year. So over the next 10 years, government will go from, you know, it'll increase $10 trillion in spending. So if you freeze spending, how much are you cutting? They would say you're cutting $10 trillion. I would say you're not cutting any if you free spend.
Right.
And most American taxpayers would say, if we spend the same amount last year or next year as we spent last year, that's not a cut, is it? Oh, no, no. In Washington, we were going to increase by $100 billion. So that's a $100 billion cut. So we have to explain to people the whole math, and the media is so biased in this that it's hard for people to get. But if we can get directly to the people and say, just cut 1%. So every day in my office, a half a dozen groups come in with their hands out like this. Can you see my hands?
Yeah, I can see your hands.
These are called the beseechers. Okay. They come for money. And I explain to them, we don't have any money. Did you see the debt clock in the front office spinning wildly out of control? We have no money. And so then I say, I tell you what, I'll make a deal with you. So your group last year got $100 million. Could you live with $99 million next year? I said, well, everybody, that would happen to everybody that gets money from government, being 1% less. Almost every one of them, even the liberals who believe that money grows on trees, if you tell them that the country is being weakened by this debt, that everybody would get one penny reduction. Everybody would get 99 cents on the dollar. Could you live with that for the next 5 years if everybody does it for the betterment of the country? Every one of them actually says yes.
Right.
But you can't find one liberal in Washington, one Democrat, that'll vote for that. The problem is not just the Democrats. No Democrat will vote to cut any spending. They won't vote for any.
Right.
But over half the Republicans are the same. They won't vote to cut any spending either. So really, there's 53 Republicans. There's about 10 to 15 that will vote for the penny plan. The rest of them will take a pass.
Well, that was going to be my follow-up question, because if we're going to talk about the two-penny plan, the penny plan of 1% or 2%, I was going to ask, where do you cut it? Because, of course, you know, if anyone goes back and watches The West Wing, they make it seem as though Republicans only want to put cuts into health care and Medicare and education, and then the left, they always only want to make cuts in national defense. So you're talking about putting that 1% or 2% cut across the board.
Yeah, I would do it across the board. Now, obviously, it would be left up to the spending committees.
Right.
The rules basically say it's 1%. If you choose to cut 100% of something and increase another category, you could. But here's the reason you probably should do it across the board. What we have is the opposite now. Democrats want to increase social welfare spending. Republicans want to increase military spending. So what happens every year is there is bipartisan compromise. In fact, the most misreported fact of all media, the biggest of all fake news is that there's no compromise up here. They compromise every day. That's the problem. They compromise to spend more money. Mm-hmm. They increase welfare. and they increase the military. Guns and butter, everything goes up. But the military spending can only go up if you give the Democrats welfare spending, so they'll vote for the military spending and vice versa.
Right.
Now, the reverse could work. The reverse could work. You could actually cut a little bit from everything and actually bring down spending. But the opposite compromise, the bipartisan compromise to spend more money, has been going on for ever since probably FDR, really.
Really. And the thing is, you can find almost all politicians at some point saying, yeah, there is some wasteful government spending. They're just usually attributing it to the other side. Or, like you said, the left often attributes it to the military and the right often attributes it to social welfare state. So it seems you're saying only 15, 20 Republicans would vote for this. So I hate to say it, but you pitch this wonderful plan that to people watching, we say, well, that makes sense. And then you make us feel hopeless. So what can people do to support it and get it going? The petty plan. Where can they go? What should they do?
Beat the you-know-what out of your legislators. Beat them over the head with the telephone. Call them, email them, and tell them, why won't you vote for this? And then nominate somebody else. You have a primary. Go out there and get better Republicans. And so I think the primaries are the place to play and the place to put your effort. Not as many people vote in the primaries, so your vote counts more, your money counts more. So I would go out there and try to get better people to represent you. And I think the louder people are, the better. The other thing is by my having the vote, even though I know I won't win because I know these people, I'm around them all the time. I know no Democrat will vote to cut the deficit, and I know half the Republicans won't. But by forcing them to vote, it embarrasses them, and it puts them on record. And maybe one of them goes home and has a strong primary challenge and says, why didn't you vote for the penny plan? So it has the potential to actually upset the apple cart and get new people up here. Here's the problem, though. They don't want to let me have the vote. I will only get the vote if I force them to, which is what we're craftily, very secretly, and I can't tell you all the secret tricks we're using to force the vote, but we think we will get a vote in the next week or two.
Well, see, that's the problem, is then you force the vote and you radicalize young youth into cutting 1% spending. I don't know who you think you are, Senator Rand Paul, but you out with the White Walkers. All right, we do have to get going. That is at Rand Paul on the Twitters. Mm-hmm. Senator Rand Paul, one of my favorite guests. I do hope that it doesn't take this long to get you back. I really appreciate it, and I do hope that we see this vote.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. God bless. We'll be back to wrap this up after this.
That's it?
Just do one like this.
I am a lawyer.
Just f*** you off, motherfucker.
I f*** you off, boss.
And we win every time. F***
I'm the f***ing best.
They always do.
Hold on, I was laughing.
Mug Club.
No, I'm gonna do it, just yes in character.
The plaintiff.
Sad word.
That doesn't even make sense. Why did I say the plaintiff?
That's it?
Just do one like this.
I am a lawyer.
Just keep them all. Hey there, Steven Crowder here with an important safety message. Now, I know that Sunday is Cinco de Mayo and you're going to enjoy your festivities, and I want you to have your fun. Take part in your neighborhood, contribute, and of course, be sure to alert your local authorities. The number is below. Happy Five.
Sir, we're gonna take these funds for the old town road. We're gonna buy a ton of black asphalt.
Right.
We're gonna take these funds for the old town road. We're gonna pave and also fix potholes.
Or we could take these funds for the old town road and maybe build a brand new stadium.
Sir, it's our entire job to fix the old town road. We must ensure that...
Is he even listening? I'm thinking no.
This is so exciting. Look, the roof is shining. So touched by this project, I named it Joe Biden. Sir, this is dismaying. Taxpayers are paying.
Ha! Studies show these never create economic
can't
growth.
Hear what you're saying. Can't nobody tell me nothing. You can't tell him nothing. Can't nobody tell me nothing.
Thank you.
called when I first learned to swim and I wasn't confident and I wasn't supposed to be in the water, I went in the water anyway and I would just push off edges and grab a breath. And then I would push off the ladder and go,
yeah.
That's what I did. It's horribly dangerous, by the way. I'm amazed. We get it. You want to be black. They've rejected you. Hey. Nature hasn't been kind. They haven't taken you in as one of their own. You were telling me about something during the break. Thank you, Senator Rand Paul,
thank you,
by
thank
the way.
You.
Keep in mind, next week, there will be a Change My Mind. You guys saw the teaser. There'll be a Change My Mind on Tuesday. There won't be any other shows because, A, Change My Mind takes a lot of work, and we're moving into a new studio.
Yes.
So we're moving all of the edit bay, green screen, where we tape all this, all that's going to a new space, and then the next phase is going to be this actual studio moving to that space as well so that we don't miss, like, 2 weeks of shows.
Yes. Yeah.
You were just telling me something, you and Too Cute Maddie, something you were mad about Burger King?
Yeah. So Burger King just released this idiotic ad today.
Okay.
It's okay to feel your way.
Mm.
So a fast food chain.
Yeah.
Sells cheeseburgers.
Yeah.
Has an ad about depression and sadness and saying F you boss. Like, it's just this, like, student
Does
film.
Does it actually show a kid writing F you boss?
No, it's some
Oh, okay.
All millennials.
Yeah.
So of course you're not advertising to people going, hey, like, it's okay to be, like, Happy Meal,
it's
you know?
Okay,
let's
be happy.
Let's all be super depressed.
It's probably because they're eating at Burger
cheeseburgers.
King.
Cheeseburgers. Yeah, exactly. This is how you feel
King
after
is kind of,
cheeseburgers.
I used to love Burger King when I was a kid and I was trying to work out.
I love their
and put
fries, but then they changed it.
The thing is, I would eat a double beef Whopper with cheese, and it would get on your fingers, and it stays with you the whole day.
Mm.
Just like to remind you of your bad decisions. Like, later, that night you could be eating chicken breast and broccoli, and it's like,
doesn't matter.
Remember me? You're like, oh, damn! This doesn't make
BK.
Up for it at all.
Oh, no.
Oh, well, I haven't seen the commercial, but I'll
it's
need
horrible.
To see
it. It's horrible. I'll
show you. I don't really know that it's worth that much time. Now we just wasted. Hey, I wanted to say, want to offer a shout out to my father-in-law here. He's a great man. Love him. He had I haven't really talked to you guys. He had a blood infection week. Actually got sepsis.
Ooh.
Was really, really tough. Seems like he's doing better. He's gone home. And when I was looking it up, I was like, well, man, this can be pretty severe. And because I didn't want to upset my wife, and then there's nothing we can do because they're in another state. It's one of the things, like I talked about, as men, sometimes you don't lie to your wife. You're like, oh, well, you know what? That can be okay.
Yeah.
But the truth is, it's really tough, can cause a lot of organ damage. Anyone who has he does seem to be doing well, but anyone who has info on that, would appreciate it. Maybe you send me some, because we'll take all the help we can get.
Yeah.
And my wife and I, it was pretty tough, had to comfort her this week. And, you know, people often say, oh, you're saying that because I love my wife. I love my father-in-law. I'm really fortunate. I love my mother-in-law. I love my father-in-law. I love my mother and my father, my wife. And we all get along pretty well. But I will say this. My wife and I have had conflicts quite a bit. And same with my father-in-law. He's a great man. We've gotten into it a few times. And I think it's important. This is what I wanted to talk about today. Conflict is not inherently immoral. And I think this ties into what we were talking about with Venezuela. This is why I push for truth over middle ground. Common ground is fine if it's founded on truth, but middle ground isn't if it's founded on a lie. It's just a polite lie. We have an entire generation of people, kind of like you're talking about with Burger King, who believe that conflict in and of itself is immoral or even impolite. No, conflict leads to breakthrough. Conflict leads to resolution. That's the goal of conflict. My parents have been together 30 years. My wife's parents have been together, I want to say 40-something. Her grandparents, 60-plus years before he got Alzheimer's. I used to see my parents argue a lot as kids. They worked it out. Italian Americans, they have nothing on French Canadians. My mother is she knows what she wants.
Yes.
She can be a pushy woman, so can my wife. They worked it out, though. So I used to see my parents argue, and I used to watch them work it out. The alternative to those conflicts and the subsequent resolution is divorce. And when you have a generation of people who were raised on the, you just need to make yourself happy. You do you. If you're not happy in your marriage, you need to make yourself happy. If you're not happy in your job, just find something else. Life's too short. You need to be happy. And how many of those people do you find end up being happier because of it? More importantly, okay, how many of them end up becoming more fulfilled? Those decisions for short-term gain. And this is a part of the leftist worldview, which ironically is rooted in absolutism. In trying to be staunchly opposed to moral absolutism, one of the only absolutes that many leftists, but many progressives believe is that conflict is wrong or that violence is wrong. But we're not even talking about that today. You know what happens in a war scenario without conflict? Genocide. Do you know what happens on a campus bereft of ideological conflict? propaganda, indoctrination. Do you know what happens in a marriage without conflict? Happy? No, divorce. Complacency. And I get it, conflict is uncomfortable, as it's easy to sell people a worldview or a political ideology that tells them their discomfort is unnecessary, unwarranted, or it's out of their control, and it promises to end all conflicts for them. I'm telling you right now that conflict is unavoidable. You can live your whole life trying to be Mr. Nice Guy, Mr. Milquetoast, avoid discussing religion and politics, avoid standing up for anything, try to fly under the radar. Conflict at some point will find you, period. And that's why I think it's important for everyone else too, but I accept conflict as a fact of life. And rather than avoid it, I want to see more people learn conflict resolution. Rather than learn how to not fight in a marriage, I want to... No one's going to learn how to not fight in a marriage. No one's going to learn how to be comfortable their whole life. No one's going to learn how to be happy their whole life. But you can learn to find resolutions through the conflict. Do you find yourself avoiding conflict of hard conversations? Or have you learned how to change people's minds? It's one or the other. Do you avoid the conflicts of your marriage? Do you let it boil over? Or do you hash out? Do you learn how to meet each other's needs, compromise? Do you avoid the conflict of your coworkers or your friends by trying to move up in the ranks? That's one thing that happens a lot, right? You try to move up in your job and people get mad. They don't like you anymore. I learned this when I became a boss who employed, there were some people didn't like me anymore. That happens. You do that in your workplace? As a result, you become complacent? Here's the thing about conflict. And this is why I think it's so scary. When you're in it, you don't know how it ends. When you're on that ascent, you don't know what happens on the other side of that crest. Think of riding a bike up a hill. Okay, it's hard and it sucks. But you often make up for time on the other side. That difficult initial climb, and it sucks, don't get me wrong, makes the rest of the ride easier, more efficient. And I don't want you to mistake this, what I'm talking about right here. I don't want you to mistake it with advising you to live a caustic life or to be one of those unbearable people looking for a fight when there needn't be one. That's not what I'm talking about. But it's like we were talking about earlier with Venezuela. Do you know what the alternative is to a civil war? Genocide or continued subjugation. And I see that on a micro level happen to so many people. People who email us on the life advice shows that we do for those who are Mug Club members. People who spend their whole lives avoiding conflict and then they wonder where they went wrong. Don't be that person. I want you to think about this for a second. Think, is there a conflict that maybe you've been avoiding in your life that you've been putting off because you know it's hard and it's uncomfortable, but it's necessary? We all have it. We've all done it. Don't be that person. If you find yourself in conflicts throughout your life, listen, you're going to lose some. Yeah, that's unavoidable. But if you avoid the fight your whole life, I guarantee you that you'll find yourself in a prison of your own making, haunted for the rest of your life by the idea of what could have been. Don't be that person. Don't avoid conflict because it's uncomfortable. All right, I'll see you next week, but not before Thursday. Tuesday.